Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, Egg Chasers. And this is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. The podcast that's here every single Monday morning with another fix of rugby. And this time, after a week of domestic rugby with international players, if you're English, back in club colours, and the Pro 14 getting on its bike again as well as we build up towards the crescendo of the season. I'm Tim, JB is here.
Hello, Timothy.
I'm glad we're not streaming anywhere because those are incredibly short shorts.
Yeah, sail shorts.
Very provocative pose you've got going on there, JB.
Don't see what the problem is.
Phil, you all right?
Very good, Tim. How's it going?
Yeah, good. Right, so because Phil is very organised and has got an agenda, on this podcast we are going to cover off all of the domestic rugby that's been going on. We have a quiz that's been supplied by one of our wonderful listeners, and that's you. Thank you very much for listening. We have some news, transfers, all the rugby stories that have been going on over this last week, and anything else, all the weird and wonderful tangents we take as well. Just a reminder, we're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We're Egg Chasers on Facebook. You can find us on Instagram. Leave your reviews. We're on Acast, iTunes, anywhere else you can find a podcast. Tell your mates. And, nice one for listening. So, let's round off some of these stories that have been breaking over the last week. Now, I actually think, let's just have an update on the Spain situation, because as we left that on last week's podcast, we kind of said, do you know what? I imagine, unfortunately, this will be the last we ever hear of it.
No.
How wrong we were.
Yeah, it kind of exploded.
Are you able to summarise it, Phil? You're quite good at this. Your logic brain getting into gear.
There's not actually that much to summarise yet.
Yeah, I'll summarise it for you. As far as I'm concerned, this is rampant corruption. That referee should never have reffed that game. It could have been avoided. The Romanian in charge of Rugby Europe did not avoid it. And I am absolutely certain, in fact, things have come to my attention this week, which I am not at liberty to disclose, that far more people know about this than are letting on, particularly on the Romanian side. And I just hope that somebody out there with something to say and some evidence which might exist comes forward soon.
So it's very cryptic.
It is very cryptic.
So some evidence that may or may not exist.
No, nope.
Right. So here's like the, you know, those.
No, it does exist.
Remember those let's study guides you used to get for GCSE or A level or whatever?
As if I got any GCSEs.
I'll just do a quick one of those. So Spain played Belgium and if they won, they would have got through to they would have qualified for the Rugby World Cup. By losing, Spain let Romania in and they qualified for the Rugby World Cup. However, Spain were incensed at the refereeing performance of a Romanian referee who 3 weeks prior to the game they had asked not to referee because of the potential conflict of interest because he was Romanian. Spain were incensed by the performance of the referee with some reason.
With lots of reason. Let's give him credit.
Spain players reacted terribly at the final whistle, as we saw and talked about last week.
Can I just get onto the Spain players reacting terribly? I don't think that they did. Because if they get cheated out of this and you know, it's basically a lifetime's work to get into the World Cup. It probably will never happen again.
Listen to last week's podcast for a full discussion of that.
Yeah, I just don't like the fact that they should have behaved differently. No, they should have thrown that referee into a wood chipper.
Yeah. It's two separate points. What's happened this week is Spain have lodged a formal complaint to World Rugby and said, on the basis of some of World Rugby's own regulations about ensuring impartiality, that the game should be replayed. They've also submitted, they said, 19 incidents in the game which they were very unhappy about in terms of the officiating.
Didn't they have two disallowed tries?
They certainly had one where
the mall got pulled down over the line. There was no yellow card, no penalty try.
Also had where their 11 broke through.
That's the one.
Only for the ref to pull it back for a penalty to Spain.
That is unbelievable.
As if no one in front of you and an open run to the try line wasn't an advantage. So Romania's response was to say, was not to say we refute the claims, etc., or see you in court, or anything. It was to say Spain players are hooligans. They shouldn't be allowed to go to a World Cup.
Yeah, well, they can do one. Because I know they weren't acting within the spirit of how a rugby player should behave towards a referee, but this referee doesn't deserve to be called a referee. I mean, if these things are true, he doesn't deserve it. So it's kind of like the old outlaw thing. You are outside of the law. This guy is outside of the law.
And then the only other things which haven't come through official channels, so this could be hearsay, but the other things which have come to light is one, a video of the referee, the Romanian referee, at the under-20s World Championship, an under-20s match where Spain beat Romania, and he's videoed on the sideline snarling and getting really, really agitated at some of the referee decisions against Romania, which is quite funny that some Spanish people found him in the crowd going mad at a ref. Anyway, wow. and the president of Rugby Europe, who is Romanian, it appears from the Paradise Papers, based on what some people have put online, that he, a little while back, acquired the TV rights for the Rugby World Cup for Romania.
Yeah, I'd love to know more details on that, because that is a fascinating angle, if true. Well,
yeah, if that's true, it's like a triple three-way conflict of interest for him in his role.
I've never thought of that. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is. I've not seen that on any major outlets, but put it this way. I suspect there will be some more some more evidence coming out sooner or later.
World Rugby have said they want an explanation of the circumstances by which it happened, and we haven't heard anything more.
Yeah.
So who knows? It could come any day now, but yeah, watch that one. We just thought an update would be good.
There will definitely be some more news on it. It will be interesting to see what World Rugby do, because while, as we spoke about last week, the Rugby Europe Championship is not a World Rugby tournament, that match had consequences for the qualification of the World Cup, which is a World Rugby tournament. So World Rugby do have jurisdiction over that. They have nothing to do with the incident that occurred, but they can officiate over it. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. There's been some transfers. Will Chudley, I mean, that's a rumour that's been bubbling most of the season. Confirmed he's on his way from Exeter to Bath. Which is odd. Bath have got a lot of scrum halves now.
They've got three.
Chris Cook, Carl Fotterly and Will Chudley. Chudders,
as well as the young
Will
Homer.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Yeah. I would definitely have Chudley over Cook. Fotterly is exceptional, I think. Mm-hmm. He's getting on, though. I think he's about
35, 36, yeah.
Yeah.
He is very good, though. I mean, he seems to get better with age.
Yeah. He's still very good, and he's still strong and quick for a scrum half at that age.
Yeah.
Todd Blackadder completely refuted the rumour of Lee Halfpenny going to Bath.
Did he?
Which came up, yeah.
Interesting.
He said that will not happen. That is not happening. I don't know where the rumour came from.
It doesn't seem like it would be a sensible way to spend salary allocation.
Do you think Bath really care about sensible ways to spend?
Good point.
Unless it's on the list.
Steve Diamond came out, and when I asked Steve Diamond about Marlon Yard, and he completely refused that as well. So
we just got him on a bad day. That's all.
Don Barrow to Northampton was confirmed. He's gone to La Rochelle first as a medical joker.
Weird things about this.
Well, it's Don Barrow it appears that hasn't been happy for a while.
It appears he's been forced out of the club. That's how it appears to me. I mean, it seems like some things were said, and Leicester have tried to engineer this move for the best part of 3 months.
Wow. Fascinating if true.
Fascinating if true, but that's exactly how I see it.
He hasn't kicked on at Leicester in the way it appeared he would. I remember him playing in a European match. I think it was against Glasgow. No, I don't know. Anyway, it was in some European match a couple of seasons ago, and he was a imperious man of the match, and that was in his first season, I think. And I was thinking then he's going to kick on.
I think he will. I mean, whether he will at Northampton, I don't know. Northampton are a real mess, but I think he's a very good player.
La Rochelle is a good place to go and get some experience.
It is. How many games have they got left? Like 6 games, isn't it?
I think it's 4 regular season games I read today.
He won't be able to go in their European Cup, obviously, because he's played in that competition for Leicester.
The honest answer is I don't know if there are cup ties. I also don't know if he's played, because he's not played in the league since like October.
A long, long time.
Yeah. So he might not be cup tied. There might not actually be cup ties, because this is such a rare thing in rugby.
Well, they might reset after the knockout.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I just don't know. Interesting question.
And another big story this week. Director of rugby Nick Kennedy gone from London Irish.
Real shame.
Declan Kidney, Les Kiss in.
Interesting combination of the team to get there. It seems a shame for Nick Kennedy, because everyone has been talking about how much he loves the club and how involved he's been in the club for such a long period of time. Yeah. I can't help thinking that he's only 35.
Exactly.
Is that all he is?
Yeah. He's already got quite a good CV. I mean, we bumped into him in 2014 when he was coaching USA against the All Blacks. And I think it can't be a bad thing for him to go far afield and get some different experience.
Yeah, it feels like it was
an
appointment too soon.
Yeah.
And I think he was smart enough to identify that, because one of the first things he did when he came in was get Brendan Venter to sort of mentor him. But how much Brendan Venter's actually been around, because he's pulled in all kinds of directions.
Yeah.
I mean, that looked on the face of it a really good move. But I don't know how much he's actually had of Brendan Venter.
Well, I think it was too soon. Having said that, you know, as we all can pretty much see that, and we all sort of agree that that's the case, just wait it out. I mean, you're going down anyway.
Yeah. You know, that's my thought on the Nick Kennedy situation. If you sign a really young DOR who you know is inexperienced, then you're making that commitment to go, we're not just going to demand that you hit the ground running.
What do you think of Les Kiss, Phil?
If you'd asked me that a couple of seasons ago, I would have told you upcoming coach, likes to play the right way, ambitious. Right now, I don't think very much, to be honest. The last two seasons have been enormously underwhelming, considering the potential attacking talents that he's got at his disposal.
Yeah, and Kidney's only a consultant, isn't he? So they'll be looking for a new director of rugby.
Yeah. It seems.
I wonder if they're interested in appointing an ex Irish second row again, who might be doing a head coach role somewhere else. That'd be nice.
Now, Irish, they aren't officially down yet.
No, and had they not shat the bed again?
Yeah.
Jeez.
So they went
the last couple of games. Up. They were 17-0 up.
Yeah, there you go.
Amazing.
And threw it all away. They are now 10 points off Worcester.
Yeah, who have all of a sudden just tanked.
They had, looking back through their fixtures, they've been hammered 3 consecutive league fixtures. Prior to that was their 2 good wins against Gloucester and Exeter.
It's almost like they thought, oh, that's it, job done.
Yeah.
We're on the beach now.
But that's exactly what it reads like. When you're looking back, they got those 2 wins, they thought, oh, we're safe, 27 points, and then they've just done nothing at all. So, London Irish, it's still not over yet. You would have wanted them to get, on their special St. Patrick's Day home game against Gloucester, you would have wanted them to get more, especially when they're 17.
Tell you what's interesting, because like you say, that's a well-attended game. Can you have a look at what the attendance was for that?
I can try and find out.
Because that will be a good guide as to, because they normally do very well and get over 20,000 for their Paddy's Day game. But just from some of the pictures I've seen, it didn't look like that.
Yeah.
But again, what you read is the attendance, and what it's the attendance, you never quite know.
15,000.
Okay.
More than 15,000 is the listed.
Right. But
the picture, the picture that they've shown for that look makes it look like it's pretty full, but you've seen a tiny chunk of the crowd.
Mm. So. All right. Well, we'll get into that game a little bit, as well as some of the other games. One really important question, though. Who did it best? Two exceptional try celebrations at the weekend in two big special occasion games. One in the London Stadium, where Maro Itoje, after a fine solo try, fell asleep in the try area.
So had a little rest.
And Nicky Gonover in the black and white stripes for Newcastle Falcons this weekend pulled an Alan Shearer as he wheeled away celebrating his try.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little bit fawning, wasn't it, by Newcastle Falcons? But I kind of loved it. I kind of loved everything about it, to be fair. I wanted to hate it.
I loved it.
I really wanted to, but I just couldn't. I really loved both the occasions.
I loved the spectacle of the Newcastle
game.
Tell you
what, fair play, Falcons. I really thought it was going to be like 20,000 and they'll, you know, seal off the upper tiers. No, they did a bloody good job.
Great job, yeah. And I loved that kit as well. And I did. Gonover's try celebration was brilliant. The Shearer into the corner.
Yeah,
I loved that.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing is as well, they must all be Newcastle fans, because I don't think you could pay someone to go and watch Northampton at the moment.
Well, that's the only disappointing thing from Newcastle's perspective. They didn't play the rugby that they've been playing all season.
No, they didn't. They started.
There was a few glimpses, yeah, but against what was a pretty poor Northampton team.
Yeah, one of the worst looking team selections I have seen all season from Northampton.
Yeah.
And I just read it, I was like, oh my word, they're going to try and beat Newcastle in St James's Park with this. And to be fair to them, they really manned up. And at times, Newcastle just looked soft.
Mm. Yeah.
Three tries to one. I mean, you could say that they were pretty lucky to win it.
Yeah. Yeah. And had a couple of decisions right at the end gone slightly differently.
Mm.
Northampton could have been in a better position.
George North seemed to come alive a little bit more than normal.
There's a lot of average players or average performances from the Northampton team. There's a few good ones. I thought Myler played well.
Yeah.
Considering it's his first or second Premiership
start. He's going to be valuable to somebody. I just don't know who.
Yeah, the experienced old head. Because he's not retiring,
nope.
But he is leaving Northampton.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to pick him up. There's no one who automatically seems logical at the moment. Maybe Worcester?
They've got what's his face coming back?
John O'Lance
coming back.
He's pretty
back.
Good.
Who coincided with them playing some of their best rugby.
Yeah. He's,
although he can't kick sticks, he can do just about everything else.
Yeah, I don't know where he'd end up, but I think he's very valuable for someone.
As that second, third choice.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is about Myler is everyone says, oh, he plays too deep. I mean, I've seen him play deep, I've seen him play shallow, I've seen him be exciting, I've seen him do all sorts. He'll do whatever you want him to do.
He's not going
to
be anyone's number one, but I think he could be a really useful number two yeah, slash three.
That's how I see him now. Unless he goes to France and you'd put him behind a monster pack and tell him to.
God, he'd be great at that.
He could do that. He could do that for another 5 years.
Yeah.
Sit behind an enormous pack and kick everything.
I've got to say, I think France is his most likely destination. I can't really think of it, who's a natural fit for him in the Premiership.
It's the number two role that he'd be going to do. That's why I think. Mm. Worcester do need a number two. Because the number two, you've got kind of Shilcock, you've got the Oliver, you've got Mills. Mm. None of them are really.
More importantly, what Northampton got bigger, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, bigger Piers Francis.
No thanks.
Malander,
I don't think he's going to play much more 10 ever again. I think he's going to be moved fullback and stay there.
Yeah.
That's my thought process.
But who did it best? Going on from the Newcastle.
Maro Itoje. Do you reckon these, I mean, obviously the Newcastle one, you can understand that probably it's like that Sinotti and Gonover got together, or one of the local lads at Newcastle went, right, when one of you two scores, because one of you will, you've got to do this.
Yeah, I do.
Do you think Itoje thought about that? And do you reckon he would have done it in training?
That's a very good
point.
Or
mentioned it with Coffee with the Boys earlier in the week?
I think he would have joked about it at Coffee with the Boys. And they would have said, yeah, if you score a try, you've got to do it. And
yeah, jokingly, because it's not going to happen.
No problem. I never score tries.
I wonder if it was for all of the England players that was teed up for.
I wonder, like the England WhatsApp group.
Yeah, so it's quite cool that Nicky Gonover did it. because I'm pretty sure he didn't grow up idolizing Alan Shearer.
Yeah.
You know, so someone must have told him what to do, and like, here are some videos. Maybe he did.
They probably showed Premiership football in Fiji.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I'd understand it if bloody Evan Olmsted or whatever his name is, or you know, one of the local lads pulls it off. But it was really cool. So actually, who did it best? I'm going to say Nicky. I'm going to say Gonova.
I'm also going to say Gonova, because so Mario Todrić is kind of confusing me. So he is the one who's received most heat in both directions about the rest in the players. So he's been criticised by Sir Clive Woodward, amongst others, for looking sluggish and tired and fatigued mentally and physically. Mark McCall has defended him and said it's nonsense. Now, by him mocking the tired aspect of it, he's almost saying that... Well, no, he is saying that his underwhelming performances are down to something else, which is either he's on a bad run of form, or perhaps he's not as good as we first thought he was anyway.
Well, Mark McCall also defended his performances and said, I think he was pretty decent against Ireland and I thought he was excellent against France. I thought he was particularly good against France.
Yeah, I thought he was good against France.
He was. His line-out has been good the whole time, actually. But it's... For much of the Six Nations, for all of the Six Nations, he wasn't hitting or carrying. That try he scored... I've not seen him carry like that probably since the Lions.
No, you're right.
And that's obviously, he is a targeted man because he is at 23 one of the best players in the world, or considered to be one of the best players in the world.
So, there is an element. Everyone's going to be tired if Eddie Jones makes you run around the field all day long and beast you. I mean, you are. You know, so it doesn't surprise me that he looked as good as he did on the weekend, and Paul doesn't see it as a problem.
Yeah, there were some people have sort of come out. There was quite a few people saying this tiredness stuff that England fans are talking about is absolute nonsense. And I don't think it's nonsense at all. But maybe the actual. Well, I mean, Carl Ferns was tweeting, and I sort of he inspired me to go and do a little bit of digging on some numbers. And last year, for example, there were about 8 or 9 Irish internationals who played against England who last season started 5 or 6 Pro 14 games in the whole season.
Yeah.
Wow.
Versus England players who were generally between 12 and 14.
Yeah, so...
Premiership games. That's a lot of weekends off.
Yeah. It is a lot of weekends off, but it doesn't strike me as if that's going to be particularly beneficial. So... You know, this is a very fashionable debate to have now. Like, all the England players are tired, etc. They are in the short term, in the same way that I would be tired if you kept me up for 48 hours.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah. So, yes, the weekends off will have an effect, but actually, you can see this week, Mark McCall said after the Saracens game, he's given, people were asking about Maro Itoje because he'd had such a good game, he said he gave Maro Itoje a particularly light training week.
Exactly.
So he just said, right, you're playing... And as it turned out, 80 minutes on Saturday. You're playing 80 minutes on Saturday, just chill out this week.
And to be fair to Mark McCall, that's exactly what you should be doing. I don't want a 23-year-old millionaire out of my sight for any period of time, really. Particularly not if he's a professional sportsman. He can come to the training, he can do light duties, and then he can play.
But you get the impression that Eddie Jones may have worked his England players, a lot harder in between games.
Did anyone mention this before the Six Nations?
Someone mentioned it during the Six Nations.
I'm sure someone did anyway. And it's, you know, it's not just the physical, it's the mental too. And it's not that they have to go to Saracens with all their mates and, you know, do Saracen stuff. It's that, you know, Eddie Jones puts them under a lot of pressure. So yeah, they're both right and they're wrong. They're right that the England players look tired because Eddie Jones battered them. They're wrong that it's going to affect the club game. And actually, as for the clubs, I do see what the argument is, but actually, what happens to practice makes perfect, and what happens to, you know, honing your skills, and the only way you can do that really is in high-intensity games.
By contrast, Saracens, everyone they could get fit and available, with Owen Farrell, George Cruz, and Billy Vunipola obviously sidelined, but everyone they could get involved in a matchday squad, they got involved in a matchday squad. Compare that to Leinster, their opponents next week. Well, the direct comparison, James Ryan... I don't know where he was, sitting on a beach somewhere. In a cryotherapy chamber. I don't know.
A beach A cryotherapy chamber on a beach.
Well, doing both heat, hot and cold therapy. Wow. There you go. He wasn't on a rugby field, that's for sure.
Most of the Irish lads I've seen, there was a load of them in Dubai doing a bit of kind of warm weather training and also just doing nothing, just sitting on a beach and having a few beers, having a few brunches.
Yeah. That's a life, isn't it?
Too right.
Yeah.
The game, Mario Itoje was excellent. The game was not the spectacle we hoped it would be in front of 55,000 people.
Did you work this one?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Mm. I mean, it was impressive to get that many people there.
Atmosphere good?
No.
It didn't look it on the TV.
No, it wasn't.
When they were playing Kanan, the 2010 World Cup song, Raise Your Flag, and everyone was waving their flags, it looked awful.
What was this? What was the 2010?
The South Africa World Cup, the Football World Cup, that yeah. is. There was a song called Raise Your Flag.
Don't remember this.
I'm not gonna get it up.
No,
it's an awful song.
Is it?
I think it's the first time I've heard it since about 2010.
And they were Kanan, playing. Kanan, you saying?
I think it was Kanan.
Raise your flag.
Let's have a look.
Raise your flag. Man with a mission.
Man with a mission. Is that it?
World Cup 2010. World Cup.
Hey, yo.
Song. Come on, Jay.
Kanan. Yeah.
Is that the one?
This is Raise Your Flag, Man with a Mission.
This is not it.
Nope, that's not it.
That's definitely not it.
That is not it.
World Cup song 2010, Wave Your Flag. Kanan, K'Nan, N-A-A-N.
Ah, I got it.
Yeah, here we go.
Right, ready?
Yeah.
Coca-Cola Celebration Mix. We've got to go through an advert first because, of course...
Do you think that Kanan is like a cool way of saying, yeah, whatever, Nan. Like,
Kanan.
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 Right, let's see if I remember. God, it sounds awful. Is this it, Phil?
Yes. Oh, you might as well get Pitbull on this, it's that bad.
So I'm just finishing having my data stolen by YouTube and I'll be back. Right back with you. Oh. So, I do remember this. I actually don't have that many bad memories of it.
Oh, I remember Vuvuzelas.
God, Vuvuzelas. Why'd you have to bring that up? I'd blotted that out of my consciousness.
I'm embarrassed to say this. I actually quite like that song.
The song's actually quite catchy.
Yeah.
But
last week playing Bruno Mars, JB, of your own accord. This week liking Kanan.
Why was I playing Bruno Mars again? Oh, yeah. That's right.
Celebrating downfall.
So the song's quite catchy. Having to play that halfway through the game to get people to try and force
during the game,
yeah, to try and force some atmosphere out of the crowd because the rugby was so dreadful,
and the rugby was so dreadful because there were about 792 scrum resets.
Perfect. So what's the downside to it? What are we saying? Where's the?
There was only about two completed scrums in the entire game. Now, if I know what would have happened if Wayne Barnes had been refereeing that game. At one point, he would have got so fed up, he'd have said, I don't know who's doing it. You're both doing it.
Yeah.
Tell you what, two of you, one from Saracens and three from Quinns, get off, yellow card, go and sort it out. Let's get some more people on. And it needed something like that to happen. It was so frustrating to watch.
Well,
with these occasional or non-rugby fans... In thousands.
That's the worst part.
Yeah.
That is the worst part. Yeah. Do you know what they should have done, right? Serious now. Because I know it's the London game and they need two London clubs. But they don't play good rugby. The team they should have had down there, Sale Sharks.
Quinn's played some really good stuff when it loosened up. They do. They're exciting when the game opens up.
But, and that try, the first try by Saracens, was brilliant.
It was.
Oh, and did you see the Marcus Smith bit of skill?
Oh, yeah.
No, I didn't.
The dummy that sent both Alex Goode and Liam Williams.
Goode completely got bought it, didn't he? Yeah. It was brilliant.
But the two international fullbacks, both sold down the river, he Amazing. Breaks around the outside.
Tell you what, he is going to be, and I think I'll put it on my board, if he isn't starting for England come the World Cup, I'll be amazed. He is so talented.
The greatest player of a generation and the number 10 at the Rugby World Cup 19.
The greatest player of a generation, we might have to wait a little longer to find out if he actually is the greatest player of a generation. because apparently Cam Redpath is going to be. but he's in with a shot. He's just amazing.
Now, Tim, the kit for the Newcastle Falcons game was the vertical black and white stripes, the Newcastle United. The Saracens kit was
blue.
A lovely blue.
Royal blue.
Which I'm told was in solidarity with Zuckerberg. His Facebook blue after the Cambridge Analytica scandal.
Yeah, I'm sure that's absolutely true. No, it's the Allianz colour, isn't it? they had a blue kit in New York when they were there, when we went to see them. Did they wear blue in Philadelphia?
No.
I think they were in grey.
No, white. Their white-grey kit.
Yeah, the white one.
But I think they're in blue or maybe they were in white, actually, in New York. Anyway, they were in blue, but it's exactly the same blue as the Allianz.
And Facebook.
And Facebook, indeed. So, yeah, maybe you might have a point there.
Well,
you might have a point.
It's a lovely blue.
Well, they do like their number crunching and data, don't they, Saracens?
Saracens have sent you a quiz, Joe Marler.
Do you think? yeah, exactly that. Oh, wow, yeah. What things really wind you up?
This and this and this.
Now, Jamie, when you're in a scrum, mention Frey Bentos pies.
Exactly.
And how the crust is too soggy. That really winds Joe Marler up.
So, apparently his nickname is Fish, which he doesn't like because of his koi carp on his arm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
So that
Zangief hasn't, from Street Fighter, that's not caught on.
Mm. So, yeah, just going back to this game, we were talking last week about resting players, and none of them got rested. And right. I guess it is because this game is so big, and that's why they're in the Allianz colours and all the rest of it. You couldn't have, just trying to think, a bunch of backups wearing Allianz kits and playing in front of however many thousand people.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I guess so.
Same with Quinns as well.
Yeah.
Rob Shaw.
That was brutal.
Yeah, Flatman said absolutely savage. To put Rob Shaw, who's been through the mill and works tirelessly and so hard for the Six Nations, straight back in.
Yeah.
Admittedly, he does get a week off next week, which the Saracens boys don't.
Yes.
Very true. And Rob Shaw was a absolute hero again. The engine on that man is just incredible. Yeah.
He is in a really good vein of form.
So the big game in London wasn't much fun. Come on, boys. Did you watch the Sale game? Because that was a lot of fun.
I've seen the highlights.
Wow.
They played some lovely stuff.
I tell you,
really, really nice stuff. Yeah.
Top six is within their sights, I'd
say. Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
100%. Maybe even top four.
Yeah, potentially. In fact, I think we should try and number crunch the top four a little bit, or just have a look, because we've got a little bit of a break now. But let's just don't take too long, because we'll get into this when the Premiership resumes. But it's so finely balanced. And what's interesting when I was looking at the fixtures is how many of those fourth-place contenders, well, third and fourth-place contenders, they all play each other. Last game of the season, it is... is it Sale Leicester?
Yes. There is a Sale Leicester game.
Sale
play Newcastle.
Yep.
Leicester play...
They've also got Exeter away.
Leicester play Bath.
Newcastle. That's it, next time. They play Bath and Newcastle, that's right.
Yeah, they also play Northampton, which is of less importance.
But there's a lot of teams that not everyone can score points on a weekend. It's going to go down to the wire. And now, with the result that happened between Leicester and Wasps, Wasps are drawn into... all of those teams could finish third.
Yeah, Newcastle are 1 point off Wasps. Newcastle are only 3 points off Saracens.
Yeah, incredible story, that.
It's Exeter are clear at the top on 65. They're 8 points ahead of Saracens on 57. Wasps on 55. Newcastle 54. Then you've got Leicester and Gloucester both on 51. And Sale 48. And then Bath 46 in eighth place. So Bath can still make the top four. But then it's a 10-point drop-off to Quinns, Northampton, Worcester and lowly London Irish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it... I think Sale are best placed to do it simply because of who they play.
So Sale's fixtures, they host Wasps.
Yep.
They then travel to Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
They then... where are we? Travel to Newcastle. Have they got a game that weekend? Well, so, yeah, there we are. Then they travel to Exeter.
That's a loss.
And then they host Leicester, which will probably be a decider for the top four.
Yeah, that game looks huge.
Yeah.
And Leicester, who have Leicester got the week before? They have Gloucester at some point, don't they?
They have Newcastle the week before.
Yeah.
Northampton.
So Leicester, Newcastle. If Leicester beat Newcastle and Sale, then they'll... I mean, it's like death, taxes and Leicester in the top four.
Yeah.
Isn't it just?
So in Leicester's favour, they are timing it right. And they've been grinding out wins and getting some good performances. Against them, losing Manu and Johnny May.
Yeah. Do we know how serious those injuries are?
Manu was holding his pectoral, which is...
suggests seriousness.
Which he's injured before as well.
Mm. Oh.
Which was a long-standing injury, 18 months or 2 years ago, I think.
It took him ages to come back from that one.
It did.
I think Johnny May will be all right, but he looked bad when he went out. He was absolutely starched.
Yeah.
Yeah. I tell you what, Sale... Sale Wasps next week is game of the week.
Two weeks.
Oh yeah, of course, because they've got a European Cup.
Let's have an Egg Chasers trip out to the AJ Bell. I'm working that one.
Yep, yeah, I'll be there.
It's Friday night. Friday the 6th.
That will be a points fest.
Yeah,
absolute points fest.
Oh yeah, we went to the one last year as well, where Denny got his first half hat trick.
That's right, his first half hat trick. Sale,
I think, have scored behind Exeter, or is it? Behind Wasps. The second most try bonus points.
Yep.
Mm. So they are playing some lovely rugby going forward. It does have to be said.
We should talk about them more.
And at home, it's very good.
Well,
Tim and I have received some criticism this week on Twitter for talking just too much about the best team with ball in hand in the league.
Hard to argue it.
So Jay, you need to drag us off subject, because you know what me and Tim are like. We could just go on about this all day, every day.
Let's move on.
They scored some brilliant tries. The Faf try was probably my pick of them.
Faf is incredible. And
how good is it? And how bad is the timing that Mike Haley is looking like he's back to his best?
Yeah.
After a really poor start to the season.
Well, I guess, I'm just making an argument. I'm just making this up, I guess. But, like, there's quite a lot of pressure on him to re-sign. You know, chances like Munster don't come often. It must be just a huge relief to be able to play and have a bit of certainty.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's true. But Faf de Klerk, AJ McGinty, who's the... just thinking of their back line. And when you've got a back line that includes Faf de Klerk, AJ McGinty, Denny Solomona, Marlon Yard, or Byron McGuigan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cheers.
But probably Byron McGuigan as a fullback next time. But James O'Connor as well. In the
James
wings.
Is the guy that people don't really recognise as a very, very talented player. They've got his little brother Luke James coming through.
Yeah.
And Cam Redpath is apparently one of the best youngsters that they've seen for a long time.
Yeah, so they're a centre away from having a pretty incredible backline.
A Jansi von Rensburg, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I know Gloucester want him as well.
Everyone wants him.
It's going to be a fight to get hold of his signature. So whoever manages it,
I think so.
There'll be a few French clubs wanting him as well.
I think Sale would be very wise to stick with Luke James, Cam Redpath, and Jennings, and just see where they go. And if they want to reinforce somewhere else with the young guy, absolutely fine. But they're in good shape.
At home, a match for anybody.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
How many people are turning out to the AJ Bell?
I'm not sure. It's getting busier. I mean, I think the Diamond Lane is starting to make an impact. Next year, they get the tram. It's on. It's absolutely on.
No, the tram doesn't go all the way yet.
It's next year, isn't it?
I don't believe the contract signed for that element of the extension.
I will defer to your knowledge when it comes to infrastructure.
I want to get this on tape, right? I want to have a very brief moral conversation. Okay, so we love fantasy rugby draft, right? The three of us love it. We're in a league. There's 10 people, so there's us and 7 others. And we're in a fantasy rugby draft league. And if you haven't got involved, you should get involved. It's brilliant. It's way better than the normal fantasy rugby model where everyone can have the player everyone would have Tolusa Vianu in their team. Only one person can have Tolusa Vianu. As it happens, the person who has Tolusa Vianu in our league is also old mates with JB. And JB, who is the second worst manager in our league.
Well, the worst active manager, let's say.
Yeah, he is the worst active manager because we have one person that doesn't really make any effort.
Yeah, weirdly.
The
you know who you are.
The effort to consequence ratio means JB is significantly the worst player in our league.
I've not really played it since for a long time.
But no. So what he did, right? Me and Phil have both made the playoffs. We're in the top four. I've snuck into the playoffs today through someone else failing rather than my own success. But I'll take it. Yeah. But JB, prior to this round of matches, gave his best mate two outstanding players that he would have needed for this weekend's game. Well, for no apparent reason. He says that he's got draft picks next season. Exactly. I don't believe you.
Well,
I don't believe you.
You'll have to wait until the draft.
How do you feel about it, Phil?
Leaves a very sour taste.
I'm stocking my cupboard for next year's draft.
Is that a lie?
It's what any good general manager in any NFL team would do.
But is it a lie?
It is absolutely not a lie. And you'll see next year.
It seems like a smart play because Jay has nothing riding on this season. If friend of the pod, Bryn Williams, was willing to accept that trade, it does seem to work.
I'd accept the trade.
Yeah, it does seem to work both directions.
Now, I do like the idea of...
So long as it does work both directions and it doesn't cheat me or fill out of a championship.
So I do want to include a new thing in rugby draft, which is I think the winner should be able to kick out any single member as of next year, because I think one member's going to get kicked out anyway. We should have a draft party, and before the draft, someone is not allowed to draft. You've got to come all prepared, and then you get kicked out before we start.
And we have someone behind a door waiting to be the new player.
So 11 people show up, only 10 people can draft.
Yes. Or that we have any... No. So we shouldn't just automatically give someone their spot. There should be several potential new players, and we vote on who we want our new player to be as well.
We should have a pool of 11, and then but only 10 play every year, and then every year that new guy can come in. It'd be brutal. It'd be absolutely brutal. Mm.
So I'm also doing a fantasy football draft at the moment, and so you need to have an even number of players, and there's 15 in our league, so there is a 16th team to stop one person having a bye every week, which is the average score of everyone else.
Mm.
And that the average score has developed a persona that is... I don't know why I'm bothering to try and explain this, but it's very, very entertaining for those people in the know.
Yes, it's very...
So JB has no morals, right? We can move on to the next point on the agenda.
Which is Cornerstone.
Cornerstone, yes.
Great segue.
Fantastic segue. The one thing we can all say with absolute certainty and no lack of morals in our heart when we say Cornerstone, we believe is the best razor that you can get. And what is more, you get an amazing deal because you're listening to us. So this goes back years now. Way before all these other razor companies were on the market, Cornerstone got in touch with us and said, we really like your podcast. We've got a little offer for you. And... people have been happy, delighted with it ever since. So £4 is how much it costs, which is nothing. There's no obligation, although we think you'll love it. £4, for which you get your 6 precision German engineered razors in a presentation box from Cornerstone in the post to you, with any other little bits and bobs that you want. And then also you get your free aluminium weighty engraved shaft with your initials, stands up looking beautiful on the side in your bathroom. £4. cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers. That's cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers or
egg10 at checkout.
And definitely don't forget that.
Do not forget that. Wasps Leicester. I enjoyed this game. How say you boys?
I'm glad I'm not a Wasps or Leicester fan.
Oh.
Because it was brilliant and thrilling and chaotic. Probably chaos is the most operative word. As long as you are neutral and you can actually enjoy it without having in one direction or the other anything riding on it.
There was some breathtaking play and just some breathtaking miscalculations.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just chaos from start to finish.
Yeah.
It was hard to know who was on top at any one time. Leicester started brilliantly.
Yeah.
And then Wasps came back brilliantly. I think there should have been a red card in this.
Which one? The Maloof?
Maloof should have gone. And arguably, maybe even Wade.
Just before we get onto this, I'm going to have to interrupt.
Uh-oh.
Alex Cuthbert joining Exeter Chiefs.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I missed that one.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've only just seen that. Alex Cuthbert is joining Exeter Chiefs.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
Wow. Who would have called that?
No one.
Baxter knows things.
Yeah, Rob Baxter does. I mean, it's interesting because Alex Cuthbert, I don't think, has the best reputation in rugby circles. And for Rob Baxter to have a Rob Baxter-esque chat with him and come back with the idea that, yeah, he's in. You know, he's one of us. Maybe it's a complete, you know, it's one of those rumours that isn't necessarily true.
It's very Exeter. It's not even true, is it? Like, Thomas Waldrum, a lot of people would have gone, really? Yeah, Thomas Waldrum?
That's a good point. Yeah. There were quite a few raised eyebrows when Waldrum signed.
Myself included. I didn't think it'd work at all.
Unfashionable, no. Unfancied.
Top try scorer, 2 years running.
Yeah.
So
wow, and actually it's quite a good four wingers. Noel, Woodburn, Short, Cuthbert. You've got four completely different types of player.
Yeah, you do.
Is Santiago Cordero. Is he staying around?
Oh, is he sticking
season?
Around? I'm not sure.
I think he's loaned. I think he's a loan.
So I don't know. But he's, again, he's probably more in the Jack Noel, but not quite as robust.
I wonder if they got a discount on him.
So again, on the face of it, you sort of go, meh. But who knows?
If they can get, so what do we know about him other than...
He's fast, that's
so
for sure.
He's very, very fast.
Good athlete.
He's very big as well. He's 6 foot six. And yeah.
But he doesn't play like 6 foot six.
No.
You know, he doesn't play like Banaham.
No. He's 6 foot six, 106 kg. So he is a big boy. But he's very athletic and he's a big boy. He's also got a very good CV.
Yep.
In terms of winning things with Wales and
Lions.
And
Lions. Lions. Test winger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, not sure who said this, it wasn't me, but a good summary of how he goes is the harder he tries, the worse it gets. And I think that that is exactly true. Do you know who does remind me of a bit is Tom James? Because he went to Exeter and became very, very good. And then he got back in the Wales team and then he was never seen again.
That's quite a good comparison.
Yeah.
Talented winger, big lad, powerful.
Good runner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am surprised. But I'm interested to see because Baxter knows things.
And equally, Jack Noel is probably very unlikely to play much at all next season. Over the next year or two because of Six Nations, Autumn Internationals,
World
building up to a World Cup.
And he can't play on plastic pitches.
Yeah. Of which there's three in the Premiership now.
Well, I mean, it very much depends if Rob Baxter puts him in his World Cup squad. Rob Baxter will decide exactly how much he plays for Exeter.
Yeah. All right, but sorry, I didn't mean to ruin the flow of what you were talking about. Wasps, Leicester.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
So shambles.
Yeah, shambles. So
entertaining
shambles.
Yeah, beautiful shambles.
So I thought that Malouf should have got a red card. I mean, I don't want him to get a red card, but I think he should have had one.
So I do quite like how Luke Pearce rationalised it by saying...
I don't. I think Luke Pearce is just flat out wrong.
Where he said there was initial contact with the shoulder and then it's rode up.
That's how it should be refereed.
But, no, it should be refereed to a consistent standard. So if the consistent standard is you start low and ride up and that's the yellow card, cool. If it's one thing 1 week and another thing
Had this same conversation about one tackle last week where we said, about in relation to the Six Nations, where the same tackle you could imagine being given a penalty only, a yellow or a red. It's really difficult, and especially when you slow-mo stuff. I like the way Luke Pearce dealt with it.
I would definitely slow-mo that because in full speed it looks bloody brutal.
Yeah, well, they actually said, slow it down and then we'll have it full speed at the end. And it doesn't really help.
No, that's not helping.
Yeah.
No one wanted to see him go, and I think that's maybe what made him stay.
Yeah.
So Malouf was a bit of a naughty boy previously or something, he would have gone for that. There's no choice about it.
Your point on consistency is interesting, and generally I do agree with that. What I would say is virtually everyone who watched that hit said immediately that is either yellow or red.
Yeah.
So you have at least got that consistency, because a few years ago there would have been a few people saying,
not even a penalty.
Yeah, not even a penalty, play on. And a few people call him for red card. Mm. So you have narrowed that spectrum down.
Yeah, that's true.
So quite a lot.
I've got a more controversial one for you, which I actually think the Christian Wade one could have been a red.
Which one was that?
When he knocked out Johnny May.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, because who was the ball carrier that knocked out the big Quinn's eight?
Luamanu
did the same thing, didn't he? He sort of chicken winged with the ball.
Oh my God!
No.
It's
a consistency thing, isn't it? I'm not saying I want that. I'm saying that it didn't even get looked at. and there's a guy on the floor unconscious. I'm thinking, well,
it only ever gets given a red card when a massive guy like Luamanu does it.
Yes.
And if a little guy like Christian Wade does it, it's not going to get looked at, which is the ridiculousness of it. And I would go with the way that they refereed it against Christian Wade.
Yeah, I don't think you can start giving...
Running forward gets you a red card.
And Johnny may put his head in the wrong place.
Yeah, so, but just to go back to that, do you not think it's weird that a guy is unconscious on the field after
accidents happen,
and they don't even review it?
Accidents happen.
Yeah, for me... The obligation is on the defender to get his head in the right place. You can't put any of that on...
I don't actually remember how he got his head there. I just remember Wade's forearm hitting his head.
So that's a still. I've not got the video. It's just the actual moment of contact.
I mean, that is very Luamanu-esque, isn't it?
Oh, my God. Like, we can't be entertaining any sort of conversation about that. That's rugby.
Yeah.
That's playing rugby.
The only thing, if he leads... Wade hasn't led with the elbow like that.
No.
If he does lead with the elbow like that, then it's a different
thing. It's okay to lead and drop your shoulder in that sort of fending motion contact.
No, if you watch it, he actually raises his forearm into May's chin. So, yeah, look, it is what it is. But I think it's weird that it wasn't.
That is a rugby incident.
It's like soon we'll actually be doing red cards like that Nathan Hughes shin onto George North's head.
Well, the argument is, isn't it, that you're not in control of your body at the time and therefore it's reckless? Isn't it?
Well, so yes, but that only applies to the defender, not the attacker.
But Luamanu got red carded for the same thing.
Yeah, that was leading with the elbow, though.
Leading with the shoulder or something.
So, but I think in this, I would say there's an argument that Johnny May has made contact with the head first.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny May wasn't in control of his head, therefore is reckless. So, as well as being carried off concussed,
red card.
Red card.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm all right with that.
Contact with his own head. Red card.
Exactly.
Stone Genge's stock went up after this game, didn't he? He did a job on Marty Moore.
Yeah, absolutely class.
Yeah.
Key part of Leicester's win.
First game back as well, wasn't it?
So it was the tries that weren't scored today, which were the stories.
Yeah,
I think Willie LaRue twice got hurt. Oh. That chip was glorious.
The one where, well, that chip was glorious, but he had two men completely unmarked, 10 meters to his left. He just needs to pass it to Daly.
Leicester threw one on the floor.
Who
did that? Was it Tamuo threw it on the floor? Something I can't remember what happened. They were basically closing in on the line.
There was the Juan de Jong in the corner where Callum Afoni got across.
Yeah.
And then there was one of the tackles of the season.
Matt Tate's.
Tate on Robson.
And was there not one third one where Robson stole the ball, basically on the Wasps' try line, and ran away with it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Robson, right, he would have gone for that try had he not had to run around an injured teammate.
And George Ford loves an intercept pass at the minute, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
Mm.
I thought George Ford did. So he did chuck in a couple of intercepts. I thought overall he played very well, particularly losing the back line, losing Tuilagi and Johnny May in the first 20 minutes.
It's hard to say. He took the ball to the line nicely, but when he was turning to pass, I mean, he fired some very hard passes. I mean, none of these are professional guys who need to catch the ball, but people were dropping things left, right, and centre. It seemed that his passing was just a little off to me. Although his running game was dangerous, which is fixing the defences nicely.
And his kicking won it at the end.
Yeah.
And his pack wasn't always on top. When Genge came on, it was at the end it was on top. It wasn't always. But when he got good ball, I thought his kicking was very intelligent.
The Cipriani kick from the touchline was superb.
Oh, the conversion.
Yeah, because there's not enough space for Gopeth to smash it with his run-up. So they give it sippers, and then you think, bloody hell, this Wasps team is just packed full of stars.
But talented.
Why did they lose it? Because they ran out of ideas.
Wasps might be missing Elliot Daly again. I don't know if it's broken or dislocated.
Horrible. Yeah, it was pointing in all sorts of directions. It was not. Yeah, and he obviously got the two tries for them.
Yeah.
But later on in the game, it's kind of what I've been saying about Wasps for a long time. They are so reliant on their talent, their skillful, talented individuals that they can run out of ideas, and that's exactly what happened.
I would credit Leicester for that. Their set-piece effort, they got on top of them, which prevented Wasps from having any ball, and their defence was very good.
Tell you who was very good today is De Jong.
Yeah, De Jong played well.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's a very good way to summarise it, isn't it? Wasps had a lot of ball. I think they played the better attacking rugby, but Leicester just hung on in there.
And the final game we haven't really mentioned was another one which wasn't quite the spectacle we hoped it would be. Quite an exciting finish as it turned out, but Exeter going to the Wreck and getting a win, 20 points to 18.
I didn't see this.
It was a workmanlike performance by Exeter. Joe Simmons again looked composed. It was a really cool moment when with 3 minutes to go, Gareth Steenson came on, and he came on for Phil Dolman, I think.
Oh yeah, Dolman's
anyway,
shoulder.
There was a moment where he kind of ran on, and probably in autopilot as much as anything, Steenson sort of ran towards the 10 position, and Joe Simmons just sort of motioned him out. Get back. It was kind of symbolic in a way.
But I've just
got so much time for that club. The way that Baxter has taken his time, brought it through, and you don't ever get any sort of sense that Steenson is annoyed, or he'll take it competitively and want to prove himself again.
Yeah.
And that will drive standards. But no petulance, no concern, all the greater good and all the rest of it.
Definitely.
I love it.
I really like that. I really like the way that Simmons has slowly been brought into the fold and he's getting bigger and bigger occasions to perform and is performing. Because the story of this game, it wasn't an exceptional game by any standards. The story was those Simmons boys who were both brilliant, but both arguably the two best players on the pitch. And they're two very good Devon lads that Baxter's brought through.
I was quite impressed with Bath. Their defence was huge. So physical.
Yeah, it's something that's been brought in. Mm. Their defence and their commitment a lot of the time is very good. They've got some good systems. But you just question some of the names on the team sheet and some of the talent that they've got or not got.
Yeah, agree. Right, we'll cover off a little bit of Pro 14 and any other things we need to talk about in a minute. But Phil, there's a quiz that's been sent our way.
There is a quiz. In fact, we've got two quizzes.
Both
from Will Fournier.
Good work, Will Fournier.
I'm going to do one of them this week and one next week.
Okay.
Save it. Now, Will, I'll read you the first three digits of his phone number, and you got to tell me where he's from.
Okay.
It's 043.
043.
Is his mobile number.
043. Is that... hold on, we've been there. Is that Romania?
It's not Romania.
No.
We've not been there. We've not had an Egg Chasers tour there.
Oh, okay.
But it is a rugby nation.
Okay. I've no idea.
South Africa.
Australia.
Yeah. Bondi City.
Is it Australia?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
It is. So Will from Bondi, Australia has sent us a quiz called Shingler's Lifts.
Brilliant.
Right.
Shingler's
Lifts.
Lifts.
Incredible. I'm in already.
Which he did say is an Australian lift company.
Of course it is.
Oh my God, that's so good.
So I've got a quick opening question for you all. Which ground has a lift testing facility outside of it?
You did text me this the other day.
Which ground has a lift testing facility?
Outside of it, yeah.
Which ground has a lift? The one in Hong Kong?
Nope, it's in the Premiership. It's on TV. You see it on TV.
Lift testing?
Yep.
Well, there's only 12, so it's not Exeter.
Nope.
Definitely not. It's not the Stoop.
Nope.
It's not Allianz.
Nope.
It's not Sale.
Nope.
Franklin's Gardens doesn't have one. Does it? No.
It is Franklin's Gardens.
Where's that? Where is it?
So if you in Franklin's Garden, there's a massive tower called the Express Lift Tower, and that's where they test lifts, or they did test lifts.
Wow, they should turn that into like a special best seat in the house place you can go up there and watch the game.
Exactly.
From
right.
200 feet or whatever.
So apparently that's where they do all like the charity abseiling and stuff now. But yeah, there's a huge tower outside of Franklin's Garden.
I will look up and notice it next time I'm there.
National Lift Tower. Lift testing tower built by the Express Lift Company.
That's
at Weedon Road in Northampton.
There you go.
That's like in... there's weird things like that in places. Like in Portsmouth, there is a... Like for training capsized boats, there's this little kind of circular tube which fills up with water, and like marines have to get out find their way down and get out of potentially like
no,
life-threatening
thank you.
Situations. Yeah,
anything I'd rather yeah. do. Yeah.
So back to the quiz. So this,
oh, yes, sorry,
this Shingler's Lifts.
So well, so we did suggest Shingler's List. Now,
but we didn't have a clue what the game would be, and suggested no. people try and come up with one.
Now, Schindler's Lifts are a company in both Australia and the UK that manufacture lifts. So he has gone for Schindler's Lifts. So this is a line-out based quiz.
Perfect.
Okay, love it.
Here we go.
So, pen and paper ready.
Yeah.
Right.
First question. And this is quite niche. In last season's Super Rugby,
oh no,
which team had the most accurate line-out throw with the highest percentage of ball won?
In last season's what?
Super Rugby.
Super Rugby?
Yeah. And oh, God. I'll give you a clue by saying, when you think about it, it makes sense.
Mm. Okay. Does it? Okay.
Okay. I killed my phone at Bath on Friday night. It's dead once and for all. I couldn't unlock it because too much of the screen got damaged. No. So I went out and I bought like a really cheap smartphone handset to tide me over until it gets repaired. I don't know where the memo app or whatever it is on this Android. It's an Android. Hold on, I'm trying to find one. Where is it?
Come on, next message.
I'll just write it in a message. There
just yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Question two. Who stole the most line-out ball at this year's, the 2018 Six Nations Championship?
Who stole
the most line-out ball at this year's Six Nations? And it was a low total. It was only three steals. The most. This is an individual player,
okay.
not a nation. Question three. What year did lifting in the line-out become legal?
Ooh. I do not know.
So if neither of you gets it on the nose, I will give half a point for the closest.
Okay.
Question four. Who is the tallest ever internationally capped rugby union player, and how tall is he? So it's two separate points, and you can get them independently.
Oh, I do not know.
And this is their listed heights.
Yeah.
So. Oh.
Because there's a couple who are listed about 6'10".
What's the name of that Welsh fella?
Who are taller.
What's the name of that Welsh? No. What's the name of that Welsh fella I remember from back in the day?
Here we go. I think I've got this one.
Okay. Question number five. What did the England team learn before the 2003 World Cup, which helped them steal more line-out ball? What did they learn? They learned a skill or a talent or something that you can learn.
Before the 90...
Or some knowledge.
They learned some knowledge before the 2003 World Cup final.
Skill, talent, knowledge. Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't before the final. It was before the 2003 World Cup.
Right, okay.
Next.
Question six, final question. Name the top three players who have won the most of their own line-out ball in this season's Avicii Premiership so far.
So
this is winning their own line-out in the...
So the players, as in the jumper or the teams?
The players.
So just the person who's caught the most lineouts.
This is the person who's caught the most lineouts.
So it's not as a percentage, it's just a...
Just an absolute number. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Nailed it. Yeah, pretty confident in that one. Do I get 3 points for this?
There's three players, 1 point for each.
Okay.
Okay, let me get up a little.
No, not it won't be them.
Little scoring spreadsheet.
Hold on.
Are you ready?
It's a good question that, because you got to think who's played the most times.
Yeah.
Who's a primary jumper?
Yes.
Come on, I'm ready to win though.
All right.
Okay, I'll give. Well, we'll get started, Tim, and you can think as we go.
Okay.
So, question number one.
Yeah.
Super Rugby, which team had the highest percentage of ball won for the lineouts?
Canterbury for me.
It's Crusaders.
I was thinking of going Crusaders, and then I just thought, as a Maverick selection, because it might be a surprise, I was looking at that shirt up on the wall. I just went to Jaguares because they have because they have all their teammates. It might be, it could potentially be the only part of Jaguares' play which is any good.
Jaguares do have those two enormous second rows,
and Augustine Creevy,
and Creevy,
who is the most overrated player on earth.
It was neither of those teams. It was the
Canes,
the Bulls.
Why would that make sense?
South African lineout.
Yeah.
Historically, Bulls always had. What's his name? Matt Field.
Okay, next.
Next one. Who stole the most lineout ball at this year's Six Nation Championship?
I went Morrow.
I said Morrow.
Then I went. I thought, no, not Morrow. Go Peter Omani. He's a pest.
Those would have been good guesses. No and no. It was the man himself, Aaron Shingler.
Oh, no. Really?
Damn it.
Wow, he's not just a weapon in the loose then.
Yeah. I genuinely think he's one of the best performing players.
Yeah.
Agreed, he's brilliant.
I'm so surprised, having seen him a few years ago, just how good he is. Question number three. So half a point available for the closest, if neither of you get it on the nose. In what year did lifting in the lineout get introduced?
91.
92 is what I said.
It was 99, according to this.
Really?
What? No!
I remember lifting when I was playing, like...
Never!
Teenage year rugby.
I'm sure the World... Surely when South Africa won the World Cup...
Yeah.
They were lifting.
Let me check this.
No, this...
This is a scandal.
This is
a farce. Who is this clown?
There was supporting and lifting. I remember when there was
you might be on something there, Tim.
On the shorts rather than like when it was you were allowed on
the
legs.
They might have to get up and then you can sort of hold
them.
You might be right there. In fact, I'm pretty sure you are right.
So from 1996, you could support a jumper once he'd jump, but you could not pre-grip.
That's right, yeah.
So I get half a point anyway, is what we're saying.
I think neither of us get a point.
No,
for that.
I don't think either of us get a point. We're so far away.
I'm not going to give either of you a point for that.
Yeah, well done. With
I know. It's probably likely because I was watching before the Scotland England game a few weeks back. I was watching that old 1990 match, and it was an absolute shambles. The lineouts then it's a free for all.
Yeah, it's embarrassing watching that. People used to pay to watch this farce.
Next question.
Next question. So we're currently on 0-0.
That's correct.
I remember watching that game, by the way, just on YouTube, the old England-Scotland game from 1990 when Scotland won at Murrayfield. And at one point, Bill McLaren goes, there's Geoff Probyn. He was the England tight head prop or loose head prop, one of the props. And he went, 13.5 stone of prop. It's like
I'm 13.5 stone.
Exactly. Or he's 14 stone. It was something ridiculously light for an international prop.
Wow. Right. Next question. Tallest ever internationally capped rugby union player.
Over to you, Timothy.
I couldn't remember it was like Derwin Jones or something. It was the one I was thinking.
Is a Derwin Jones, you're right.
But it was someone like that. Was a massive Welsh fella. Humongous man. But I didn't know, so I just went with Long Dog, Luke Charteris, because I couldn't remember his name. And it's not...
Well,
it's,
the correct answer, Tim, is... Andres Bakke, and he's 7'2", I think.
So, not the answer I've got down here.
What?
The answer we've got down is Richard Metcalf.
Oh, maybe.
13 Scotland caps. And Tim, what height did you have down?
I know that Luke Charteris is 7 foot.
Yes.
But I said 6'10".
So, no points again. 7 foot dead is allegedly what Richard Metcalf was.
Luke Charteris is 7 foot.
Right, hang on.
Luke Charteris is 7 foot. I want to have this.
Bayfield as well.
Bayfield's 6'10".
He's listed
6'11".
He's listed as 6'10".
He's not as big as Luke Charteris. Not at all. No. Luke Charteris is 7 foot. I'm telling you, it's just he's embarrassed to be 7 foot. That's why he's not listed.
Right, that's amazing.
I know.
On hang on.
Andres Becca, you said, Jason.
Yes.
Or Bacca or whatever. Backy, or
listed at 6'10".
Okay. 6'11 here. It's whatever.
It's a lie. It's a lie.
It's a joke is what it is.
Anyway, we're all we're nil-nil.
Nil-nil with two questions to go.
All locked up at nil-nil.
So, question five. What did the England team learn before the 2003 World Cup, not the World Cup final, which helped them steal more line-out ball?
I know sign language. Or okay. Basketball. Sign language.
Sign language.
I wrote down, because I remember them doing it, Clive Woodward doing it, but I don't think this is related. They definitely did this. They were the first team to bring on like a skills coach and catch with small balls.
Oh, yeah, they did.
But I don't think that's
and
what
they
this
did,
is.
They did like peripheral vision training.
Yeah, peripheral vision. Peripheral vision. So that was the training I'm talking about, training with small, different size and shape and weight balls.
Basketball and or sign language.
Is incorrect.
Incorrect. Your peripheral vision stuff.
I said peripheral vision.
I didn't say the phrase peripheral vision.
Is incorrect, but the doctor, Dr.
Jamie Roberts.
Shirley Calder,
yep.
Who was their eye coach, for want of a better word.
That's what they had. Yes, I remember.
Peripheral vision coach. No, the doctor taught them Afrikaans because they played.
Oh, yeah.
It was a South African doctor. They played South Africa in the group stages.
Now,
so they taught them some Afrikaans. So
this sounds mental, right? This is just coming back to me. Did they not practice relaxing their eyes? I swear to God, it was something bloody weird. Like
they had a computer program that they used to train their eyes.
Yeah.
It's all the 1%. It's
exactly.
Clive Woodward management coaching.
Marginal gains.
Yeah.
So we go into the final question where there are 3 points available. With the scores tied at an impressive 0-0, which, Will, you've obviously overestimated the capabilities of these two. So, final question. Top three players in the Premiership for line-outs one.
I'll go first?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure this is the... Actually, you can go first, Tim.
Okay, I'll go number one, Bryn Evans.
Oh, my number one is Bryn Evans, damn it.
Incorrect.
What?! Okay, number two, Tim.
Well, you go first on this one. I've got mine written down.
Callum Green.
That's a good one, actually. I said Courtney Laws. I know he's missed games for England, but he's played quite a lot for Northampton.
I can tell you Courtney Laws is incorrect.
Callum Green is then.
Callum Green is correct.
Yes!
Oh, no!
Yes!
No!
So there's one more.
No!
Unless Tim gets it, JB wins.
I've got it written down and I won't change it, but let's go with what JB says, because if he gets the same name as me, then I can't win anyway.
Jamie Gibson.
Okay, I said Don Armand.
Ooh.
Don Armand is incorrect.
Oh, I know X to use him a lot.
Jamie Gibson is remarkably correct.
Yes!
What?!
So JB wins.
No way! Jamie Gibson!
And who's the other one? I know my lineup.
So Jamie Gibson is in third.
And the last one?
78.
Is it Johnny Hill?
Johnny Hill is
number
one.
There you go. That's how you do it.
Google's good, isn't it? Google's useful, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you could Google that in that time, I would be very impressed.
Yes! Damn it! Well played.
Yeah, fair play.
You can't play fantasy rugby draft, but you can do a good line-out.
Well.
And thank you, William Fournier, for Shingler's Lifts.
And next week, you two have to look forward to the quiz called Alan Wynn Jones.
Oh, wow.
All about winning.
I'm going to do some research on that then. We can SWAT up. Get ready.
Yeah. So there you go.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free.
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right. Ulster.
This season is just a write off. We're gonna finish below everyone.
You're gonna finish below my team, of course.
Yeah. We're gonna finish below Cheetahs, below Cardiff, below Ulster, below Benetton.
Hey, Benetton are going places. Good, deep, strong squad.
We have fewer points than Cardiff Blues now.
Oh my goodness me! And John O'Gibbs was quite honest about it. He said, "Where is the so they lost 35-17, and after that, John O'Gibbs said the scoreboard isn't a fair reflection." And you think he's going to say we did a lot better of how utterly we weren't in that game?
Wow! Zing!
Yeah,
it's they might as well just give up.
So I guess the sad thing about the Pro 14 this year is actually the bottom four clubs are Southern Kings, Dragons, Zebre and Connacht. I don't like Connacht being down there. It seems like, you know, they peaked and now they're going back to type, and that isn't cool. Southern Kings, fine, don't care. Dragons, don't care. Zebre, don't care. The good news is Benetton are sort of getting their act together. I mean, they've won 9, lost 9. That isn't actually bad.
Well, they're 1 point off Ulster.
But Ulster have a game in hand.
Yeah, but... This is credit to Benetton. It's Ulster are very poor, but Benetton winning 9 games is a remarkable season.
It is good.
It would probably normally take them about 4 seasons to win 9 games.
I'd be interested to see how many wins they've got combined in the previous seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, it isn't many.
Do you want to hear a couple of Ulster rumours that have been flying around?
I'd love to.
Go on. Be careful with Ulster rumours, though.
Yeah. Joey Carberry could be a 1-year loan, depending on the outcome of...
Other
situations. Yes. Johnny McPhillips wants to come to England. And Sean Edwards, potentially new head coach for Ulster.
Don't like
Sean
it.
Sean Edwards. I would take Sean Edwards.
Would you?
Yeah.
I've not got this from anywhere else than just looking at rumours which are flying around online on the interweb. So,
yeah, I would take Sean Edwards, definitely.
Maybe. It's a good job, the Ulster job. It's a very good job.
Great crowd, great ground.
I love that stadium.
Passionate. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, brilliant crowd, brilliant fans, brilliant stadium. Quite a bit of money. The marquee signings for the past couple of seasons have been as good as any on paper. Now, Pietau, when he's been playing, has been as good as anyone. Kurtzia, not so good in reality, which is not really his fault. And I feel desperately sorry for him and Ulster, but it's just not worked out.
Why is he still injured? What's his
knee recurring? It's just not right. He's had, I think, at least 2 surgeries on it. It was a cruciate issues to start off with. It doesn't look good for him because he's still only a young man.
How old is he?
25, 26.
Ooh, that isn't good, is it?
Yeah, he's not really played for 2 seasons.
Yeah, that's pretty miserable. I guess the 2 stories of this year's Pro 14 are Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Who are going great guns. Didn't they used to be called the Gunners at one point?
Edinburgh Gunners.
Were they the Edinburgh Gunners? Yeah. Edinburgh Reavers at one point.
No, that's Border Reavers.
Border Reavers, yes, you're right.
And Cheetahs. I mean, Cheetahs are a real, real good addition. So both those teams are now in playoff positions. I don't see Ulster catching Edinburgh anytime soon, do you?
No.
Not so much.
No.
And Cheetahs, they are... Cardiff Blues have come into a bit of form, to be fair.
Ulster are 13 points behind Edinburgh, so no. They've got a game in hand, but still no.
Munster stayed on course for a home quarter-final, beating Scarlets.
Yeah.
There was a few international players amongst the squad there.
Yeah, Peter Omani and Conor Murray.
Tom Vandell played for Scarlets.
Say it again, sorry?
Tom Vandell played for Scarlets.
What? Really?
Say that again, sorry?
Tom Vandell played for Scarlets.
Wow.
Why?
Is he going for the Pro 14 try-scoring record as well?
Yeah. I think he's just on loan to the end of the season. Bristol are pretty much promoted. I don't think it's a sign that Bristol don't want him. I think...
Sounds like it. There again, Bristol have also lent out the Georgia captain to Ospreys.
Yeah.
Have I not picked up on Vandell going to Scarlets?
I've not seen that reported anywhere. It must have been. I'm not. Wow.
Scarlet's had a lot of first team players in that one, and Munster kept quite a lot of their players out. So interesting, and a good win for them.
Well, Munster obviously have the home semi-final. Oh, sorry, home quarter final against Toulon to look forward to.
Toulon, did you see their result?
Yes.
Absolutely walloped Clermont.
I don't really know how it happened. I didn't see the game.
I'll tell you one thing. So Clermont are... I've not seen the game at all. I only saw the team sheets, but Toulon played a fairly solid team. Clermont rested quite a few players because Clermont hosts Racing Metro next week. So it's not...
And they've got big injury issues this year.
Yeah, they really do have big injury issues.
Yeah, but there's resting players and there's losing by 50 points. I mean...
They're away from home, they just don't care.
I mean, Tok H only beat Marple by 61. You know, and...
The most interesting bit out of that game is Chris Ashton has levelled the top 14 all-time try-scoring record in one season. Four games left to go.
Wow.
He was brought off with 30 minutes to go as well. So it looks like he will smash that record.
Amazing, isn't it, that England don't want him?
Yeah, and haven't wanted him. Well, has he played much since the 2011 World Cup?
Don't think so.
Did he play?
I think. Did he not have some disciplinary issues and Stuart
Lancaster?
Stuart Lancaster's like, yeah, no, you're not coming back. You're not our kind of guy. And Eddie Jones just never liked him.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, we can probably talk a little bit more about some of the Pro 14 sides, and French sides for that matter, looking ahead to the European Cup quarterfinals. But before we do, a couple of other stories that have gone around worth just mentioning. Argentina are going to start selecting European-based players again.
Yeah,
fine.
Which we always knew they were going to do it. There was always a question mark of when before the World Cup,
yep.
But seems sensible, and seems like they have to do something to turn around the fortunes of the Jaguares and the Pumas. Although the Jaguars got a good win this weekend against the Lions.
That is a good win.
And what's this Pacific Islands combining? What's going on there?
The Pacific Challenge, which is, I think right now it's Japan, Tonga, Fiji, Samoa, like their second teams play around March, April time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's their second teams as in it's none of the players who play in Europe or elsewhere in the world are selected. And World Rugby have announced they're going to do a combine-type system, as in NFL draft combine-type system.
Oh!
Where the players, so the best-performing 30 players from Fiji, Tonga and Samoa from that tournament each year will go into a week-long training camp where there will be coaches from specific teams within Australia, New Zealand and Japan who can then pick up those players.
Wow.
So it's like a week-long showcase of those their talents, but they are already tied to the national team.
Got you. Oh, so, that's pretty cool.
So it gives those players a brilliant opportunity.
They get the opportunity and the access to coaching, to cash.
Yeah.
To
education.
To elite-level performance.
But you have to have played for one of your nation.
Yes.
Perfect.
Exactly.
Great. So,
It seems really simple.
That's a really smart move.
It's just such a simple idea. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out,
or if any like superstar in the making says, "I'm all right, actually. I'll swerve this one."
Yeah, not for me.
Yeah, but really good little initiative. So yeah, I thought it's worth mentioning.
The coaches from New Zealand, Australia, go there, look at players in training and stuff, and then pull one to one side and go, "Listen, you're going to get a hamstring injury today. you're not available."
I just say, right, does it ever confuse you when ex-players how is this try and create a brand for themselves? I know why they do it, but sometimes it's a little bit misplaced. Do you know what I mean? So like,
give me an example.
Robinson 15 brand or 15.
Oh yeah.
Well, I found the new one. Yestin Harris feels like he needs his own brand, and I've just picked up on his Twitter, the official Twitter feed of Yestin Harris. So no chance of you getting any of those fake Yestin Harris accounts. and he's got a little H, look, a little rugby cross for his brand.
Let's have a look.
See that?
Yeah. So it's minimalist.
Yeah, Yestin Harris has his own brand, which I don't know. feels unnecessary.
It does. What's he doing these days?
I don't know, but he's got 2,000 Twitter followers.
2,000, wow. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you. I think I'd love a Yeston Harris H on my next polo shirt.
Well, how could JB be made? How could JB be rugby-fied? The letters
there
J and B.
There must be a JB brand out there somewhere. Hmm. Do you know how I would brand up JB for maximum rugby effect? I'd put a J and a B on and make them into handles of a world famous rugby trophy. Oh wait, hang on. It exists.
I would just have the letters. It would be LTBP, but the B has a J above it, and the B and the J in different colours.
Ah, nice. And you can make the two circles of the B out of rugby balls.
Yeah. I think I'm going to stick with the JB Cup.
All right, we've got an awesome weekend of European rugby. The only... Well, it's not a downside, actually. It's sort of bittersweet. On the one hand, the rearranged Anglo-Welsh Cup match means that there's been a rejig in who goes where, and I'm no longer, as I mentioned before, going to Galway for Connacht.
That's a shame.
Because I'm going to Llanelli for Scarlett's La Rochelle.
Upgrade.
Hello.
Yeah. Which I'm very excited about.
Massive upgrade.
So with that in mind, let's get into some of these European Champions Cup semi-finals. And the Challenge Cup, I think, is probably at the point where we can start talking about that now.
So we can fly through the fixtures.
Yeah, do the Challenge Cup first.
So Friday night, we have two games. Newcastle host Brive and Pau.
Pau, Pau, Pau.
Pau, 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 Pau.
Host Stade Francais.
Don't know the second one. And the first one is?
Newcastle at home.
Against?
Brive.
Yeah, give me Newcastle.
Then we have Connacht hosting Gloucester.
Gloucester.
I think Gloucester like a little run in the Challenge Cup.
They're the holders.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
No, hold on.
No, everyone
they got to the final.
They didn't.
They didn't win. No, they had that great win in La Rochelle.
Yeah. And then
in the semi-final.
Did they lose to Stade?
Yeah, so they won away in La Rochelle in the semi-final. So going to Connacht will not faze them.
Yeah. Did they win last year?
They won the year before that, I think. Did they beat Edinburgh in the final?
So Montpellier definitely won it because they beat Harlequins. And then
who beat Gloucester last year then?
Must have been
Stade Francais.
Stade Francais, yeah.
Let's have a look. European Challenge Cup. Wins by club.
The final in Bilbao, actually, which is meant to be an awesome city.
Oh, yeah. We are going to Lisbon. I keep forgetting to mention that. We are going to Lisbon Tens for the final.
Last weekend in May?
Last weekend in May, Lisbon Tens. I will give
it's
you...
It's in the same general direction as...
Bilbao.
As Bilbao. No, but that Bilbao's the European Cup finals are on the 12th.
Yes.
Yeah, so for final weekends for Premiership and Pro 12
Premiership
final,
and Pro 14, yeah.
You can watch it with us in Lisbon. I must talk about that more. In fact, I'll get it over on our social media channels sooner rather than later. But yeah, Lisbon Tens should be good fun.
The previous winners of European Challenge Cup, so Stade Francais beat Gloucester last year, yeah, as we said. Montpellier beat Quins the year before that. And then Gloucester beat Edinburgh
the
year before that. And that's as far back as we want to go. So, Gloucester will win in Galway, I think. And then Edinburgh host Cardiff Blues, which Edinburgh will win.
Yeah, so we're predicting the final, the semi-finalists to be Edinburgh, Gloucester,
Pau.
Pau, but I don't know. Let's go Pau because they're at home in Newcastle.
Yeah.
And now, I know it's the next season and we're not really talking about it, but Edinburgh going well this season. Mm. Next season, I think they're going to be dynamite.
Yeah.
They get John Barkley back. And they've also signed... did we even talk about this? They signed Santiago...
Not Santiago, the other one.
Oh, yeah. Not Minicino, Maxicino. Cicino.
Cicino.
Yeah, Cicino. What's his first name? I've completely brain farted it.
I just call him Juan. Something like that.
Yeah. What is his
name? Oh, my God.
So Santiago...
Juan Pablo.
What did I call Juan?
Santiago Cicino is his hooker brother. Younger brother.
He was very, very good.
Yeah.
So that's a hell of a signing, and John Barkley's a good signing. So
we got the Anglo-Welsh Cup final, which is happening on Friday as well.
Can't wait.
In the afternoon, 2:30. So we'll have the Anglo-Welsh Cup final to get the weekend going.
Oh, that's Friday at 2:30.
Good Friday.
Awesome.
Yeah. So Good Friday, Bath Exeter in the Anglo-Welsh Cup final. Bath picked quite a good team for this. Exeter also picked a good team, but none of the guys that were involved in the Premiership game at the weekend. I'm going to go Banners to score the winning try and win some silverware for Bath in his final season.
Banners
at the ground that he's going to be playing at next season. It's set for banners. 10 years. He's the only member of the Bath squad that won the Challenge Cup, the last trophy Bath won 10 years ago. Probably in that shirt that we've got hung up on the dungeon. It's about that long ago, the old Puma jersey. So I'm going to go Bath to win, banners winning try.
Seeing as you've painted such a lovely narrative, Tim, I'm with you. Bath to win.
Or Steenson will go and prove everyone he's awesome and score.
Yeah, he's still got it.
I'm not with you at all. I am going Exeter.
Okay. Champions Cup.
Champions Cup semi-finals. Here we go.
So Friday, it's confusing me. Obviously, it's Good Friday. Friday at 5:30 p.m. Scarlets host La Rochelle.
Oh yeah, it means I can get away. I can get away at a reasonable time. Might even be able to get a train back. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Lovely.
So you're not in the Travel Lodge or Premier Inn?
No.
In Llanelli.
Oh, I might be otherwise.
So Friday night, yeah. Scarlets host La Rochelle. What to make of this?
Two incredibly attacking sides. This should be so good.
Yeah, this will be a brilliant game. And if La Rochelle play like they did for the first three games of the Champions Cup this season, rather than the latter three games, this will be a hell of a battle.
Scarlets at home. La Rochelle are incredible at home.
Yeah.
Not so good on the road. There's just something about that Scarlet side at the minute.
I don't know is the answer. I kind of feel that the Six Nations is a weird one for the Pro 14 because the team feels like it's been gutted for so long. Like that Llanelli team probably hasn't been together for...
Well, since January.
Yeah, they've not played a full game. And same with Leinster. So... Although everyone talks about resting players, so on and so forth, I don't think it actually works in their favour. Because of that, I think I'm going to go with La Rochelle. I think they'll be a slightly better, more rounded team and more cohesive on the day.
I'm going to go against that and say Scarlets will be fresh. The players who come back in will slot in nicely. Because, for example, Patchell, Hadley Parks, Scott Williams, Steph Evans... and Halfpenny have all been playing together, and Gareth Davis.
Yeah, they have.
They've 80% of the starting lineup for half the time has been playing together. So I don't think they'll lose too much, and I think the home advantage against the French team will be enough. So give me Scarlets.
On Saturday, there's just the one Champions Cup quarter final. It's a big one though. Munster against Toulon.
Toulon will just be too powerful.
But that Munster pack is so well organised, so well drilled.
They are well drilled, you're right. But
and it's Thomond Park as well. That's got to be worth 10 points.
Where are Toulouse in the table? Toulon.
Toulon are in fourth place.
It's hard. Yeah, I'm starting to doubt myself now. Maybe Munster. No, I'm still going to go with Toulon. Just to beat their way through.
Toulon are in fourth place. They have scored the most points for, and they've comfortably secured the most bonus points.
They're really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, Toulon for me.
I think this Toulon team, what it lacks from other teams is the experienced leadership that they had a few years ago when they had the likes of Heyman and Botha and Wilkinson and Gitto, all those boys. They've got talent and they've got names there now, but I don't think they've quite got the leadership, so I think...
Garrido's a pretty good leader.
He is, but being a French...
Gorgodza as well is in there.
Yeah, being... I almost think that they need... They need an English-speaking leader. Does that make sense?
Like Chris Ashton?
Yeah.
Well, bilingual, English, French. Like they need Johnny Wilkinson.
Someone like Johnny Wilkinson. Giving the team talk in English
and French. Yeah, someone like that. I don't think Ashton does it. I don't think Nonu does it. I don't think Samu Manoa does it.
No.
I don't think Fekitoa does it.
No.
So, I think they're missing something. So, I'm going to say Munster to win by 3 points.
Interesting.
I think this will be a massively physical bludgeon fest that Munster will just... get on the right side of with Peter Omani, man of the match.
Interesting. Ooh, man of the match prediction.
Mm. Sunday then, we've got two Champions Cup quarterfinals, Phil.
We do. We have...
Lunchtime.
Yeah, 1 o'clock kickoff. This is a nice time. Clermont hosting Racing. Now, Clermont, who obviously has just been on the back of a real hiding from Toulon, I don't expect to see many of the players who played for Clermont in that game playing in this, but it will still be a depleted Clermont team. And it's depleted Clermont, but it is at home.
So Clermont have got injury problems. They've lost a lot of games. They're not as high at the table as a Clermont team should be.
They're in ninth position.
Exactly. And I don't think that this... So if this is just a really random one-off result, they bounce back from it. But I don't think it is. I think it's an accumulation of a lot of things, and I don't think they will be able to beat Racing. So for me, it's going to be Racing.
Racing, who are in second place in the top 14. So I'm going with you. I think Racing are going to win this.
Yeah, that crowd. That's the probably the, of all the stadium that I'd like to go to, I'd like to go to the Marcel Michelin.
Definitely.
Again, that's got to be worth some points on a match day.
It will be. I don't think it'll be worth enough.
They comfortably... I'm just looking at their recent results. Yes, absolutely hammered. They beat Pau. Pau. At home. What was the team in that? What team are they putting out in their last home game, Phil? Chuck some of the names out there.
In their last home game? Give me a minute.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Okay. French top 14.
It doesn't really matter for...
Clermont, so when they beat Pau...
Pau.
Ugh, stupid website. Not even got their team.
They beat La Rochelle at home. They beat Brive away. They lost to Oyonnax at home before that. Ooh, it hasn't been an ugly season. They lost to Spank by Lyon. Lost at home to Montpellier. Are hammered away at Racing 92 in January. 58-6 at Racing 92. Lost to Cast at home. Oh, lost to Pau away. Oh, yeah, they've had an horrible season, haven't they?
So they're try scorers when they... that isn't even...
Doesn't matter. You're right. Racing 92 are going through. And then...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not with the big Jumbotron ground. No, that's not them, is it? Is that Racing 92?
That is.
It is.
Their home stadium.
Their old stadium was horrible.
Their indoor stadium is now the Jumbotron.
I love that stadium.
Yeah.
Right, last game of the week.
Last game!
Is it a big one?
It is a reasonably big game.
Excuse me. Sorry, my coughing tonight.
Here we go. I am going to pin my colours to the mast. If that's the right saying.
Leinster v Saracens.
Yep.
Now this should be... This is first seed versus eighth seed. The unbeaten, imperious Leinster against the team that only just snuck through by the skin of their teeth after losing at home to Clermont, who we've already spoken about some of their struggles this season. They were hammered twice by Clermont. So 1-8, Leinster versus Saracen. So this should be a done deal, right?
Yeah, it's going to be Leinster all the way. It will not be Leinster all the way for numerous reasons. So reason number one, I think a lot of lads will be looking at this as a replay of Ireland versus England. There's a lot of commonality. Is that what
you can imagine a guy...
Commonality, thank you.
Assuming he will be fit, and to be fair to Owen Farrell, he was running around on the pitch in the warm-up yesterday. He looked like he had a spring in his step. I absolutely 100% expect Owen Farrell to play.
Absolutely.
And you can imagine this is the kind
of...
Exactly as you described... You could imagine Owen Farrell, the second the full-time whistle went at Twickenham, he was thinking...
So, reason number two...
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Right, reason number two is the Saracens coaches are better than the England coaches. For start, they actually have people in charge of their attack. Number three, the England players are nowhere near as bad as we think they are. I mean, I say that. They're getting a lot of stick, and they are a real good bunch of players. If they weren't, this Saracens team wouldn't have won two European Cups back to back. So I actually don't think Leinster are going to have it all their own way. And I think about 60 minutes in, they're going to feel a little bit of panic, and Saracens will take the lead, and they will sail through to the semi-finals.
Wow, JB going with Saracens.
Mm-hmm. I think the Leinster, again, with echoes of England in the Six Nations, I look at the back row. From what picking up on what Mark McCall has been saying, doesn't look like Billy Vunipola is going to make it. And Nick Izikwe as the flanker, and Jackson Ray, Nick Izikwe, and Scout Berger. Yes, some exceptional players, but that's not a back row to win at the Aviva Stadium.
How is Callum Clark? Is he out still?
Yeah, they've had three broken arms, and Callum Clark was been one of them.
Ooh.
And Michael Rhodes was another.
Oh, really?
If George Cruz comes back, who was in the second row with Marrow at the weekend?
Dom Day.
So that's not going to make any difference. So George Cruz might go in there. So yeah, it'll be an exit. I just look at the Saracens back row and think that's not going to win in the Aviva. The Irish back row is going to get the better of them.
With
Levy and
Conan
and
when you put it that way, I find it hard to disagree with you. Actually, we'll have to see what teams that they've put out. But I've still got a very good feeling about Saracens.
Oh no, I could totally see them doing it. Like you say, they're two-time champions.
Yeah,
and last year they went to Dublin in the Aviva in the semi-final and beat an Irish team, albeit it was Munster.
Yeah, no, you're right,
but I think this is going to be a game too far. I think if it was... Yeah, back row is a key weakness. I think if it was a fuller strength Saracens team, and it's only really that back row.
Michael Rhodes and Billy Vunipola in that back row.
Makes a difference.
Makes a whopping difference.
Yeah, enormous difference. The carrying, because more is going to fall on the likes of Cruz if he's available, Itoje and Mako. And we've seen when those boys have to step up on the bigger stage, as they've been having to do for England, they can do it a little bit. They can't do it to the same extent as someone like Billy can.
But as JB has pointed out, Saracens do have, assuming he recovers from a neck injury, Brad Barrett, who'll bosh all day long in the centre.
Exactly. It's very,
they've got that solidity, him and Bosh. Yep. Barrett and Bosh in the centres. No one's going to get easy yards through them.
No. But Leinster don't need to get easy yards.
No.
They've got an amazing pack. Basically, they've got an international pack.
Yeah.
And they've got Johnny Sexton. And they've got some serious talent out wide as well. The likes of Ringrose and Carney's playing so well. And Lama, if he comes on, if he plays.
Yeah. Wow.
I think it's going to be a game too far for Saracens for me. Mm. I think Leinster will win. It'll be close. It'll be an arm wrestle. And then I think because Saracens are a bit stretched on 60 minutes when Leinster are bringing fresh legs on, I think Saracens will be bringing...
But if there was one group of guys that, again, with so many England players, if there's one group of men who have the mentality to... And actually, the failure of England will add to their performance in Dublin.
It will.
Massively, it's Saracens. They've got that in their locker. Oh, I can't wait for that one. So good. It's so good. It's the end of the weekend as well.
Yeah.
Oh...
Well, is so it? Because it's just going to mean I'm going to be wishing away my weekend, and you never want to be in that position.
Well, no, there's loads. There's only a handful of games, but they're all brilliant games this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, man, it's so good.
The only thing I'm disappointed at is there isn't a Thursday night game. I wish one of the Challenge Cup would be a Thursday
night. Yeah, they usually do that. Why have they not done it this time?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh. Right, bring us home, Tim. Let's go.
You know where we are. You know what we have. You know who you want to go and tell. Thanks for listening. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.